Hey, guess what? Shopify Masters is now on YouTube. So if you want to watch this interview instead of just listen to it, head over to YouTube, search for Shopify Masters. You will not want to miss it.
We offered catering services, specifically coffee and matcha, in the Louis Vuitton office in Paris.
Hey everyone, welcome to Shopify Masters, your companion for starting and building a business. I'm Shuang Esther Shan. What does matcha have to do with fashion, art, or music? Founder Rocky Su created a cult favorite LA-based matcha brand that aligns itself with many brands and events outside the beverage industry.
We took a lot of like what we learned and were able to be maybe a bit more disruptive.
I know that Justin Bieber and Hailey Bieber are drinking your matchas. Rocky's Matcha found its customers doing pop-ups all across the globe.
We reached out to one of the more storied producers. 2 years later, they replied and they said, "Hey, we see what you're doing."
We invited Rocky here to share how he's built a beverage brand at the intersection of food and culture. Thank you so much for being here, Rocky.
Thanks for having me.
How did this whole thing all begin?
To be honest, it was a bit of a happy accident. You know, I'd worked in a corporate environment for basically my entire career. Mm-hmm. And in the corporate environment, like one of my many jobs was to basically try and extend the brand that I worked for. Early on, it was Nike. And then more recently, it's been with Beats. It was always to try and extend the brand beyond, you know, at Nike, it was beyond sports. So it was into the world of art and fashion and food and design. And, you know, I met a lot of amazing creatives along the way. And I would say probably in like 2021, 2022, some of my closest friends were like, "Hey, have you ever thought about doing your own thing?" And, you know, the default thing that they wanted me to do was to start an agency that would connect different people, because I'd lived in Shanghai, I'd lived in New York, I'd lived in, obviously, here in Los Angeles. And that was kind of like what people were recommending. And I was just like, I don't know if I want to do that, just because mm-hmm. like it could feel a little icky if there's like an ulterior motive to connecting people, you know, like I kind of just like connecting people for the sake of connecting people. And then around that same time, I had given up coffee and I'd started mm-hmm. drinking more tea and specifically matcha. And, you know, a friend of mine, Paulo, he was getting ready to launch his first flea market. And he was like, "You know, I know you've been doing the matcha thing. Why don't you bring it and serve it at my flea market? Because like, I want people to walk into my flea market as if they're walking into my home." Yeah. And he was like, "My mom's empanadas are going to be there. We call it Carmen's empanadas." He's like, "We have a pizza shop in Osaka. We call it, you know, Henry's Pizza." He's like, "Why don't you just call your thing Rocky's Matcha and wow. pop up?" And so that was kind of like the genesis of it.
All over the internet, people have been reviewing Rocky's Matcha, and the consensus is that they all love it, which is hard, right? It's a homogeneous product. It's hard to stand out. So how did you go about finding the right taste, the right flavor profiles?
I look at like what's going on like TikTok or like matcha talk as they're calling it now, and yeah. YouTube and, you know, Instagram and all these different like social media platforms right now, in terms of like just people going out and buying a ton of matcha to try because they want to, you know, find their favorite sort of flavor profile or taste profile or what have you. And like, I was basically doing my version of that. I just wasn't putting it on the internet in 2021, 2022. And so as I went out and started doing that, and as Japan sort of reopened back to the world in late 2022, I was able to go and meet with different producers and, you know, get a sense of what was out there, what's available, mm-hmm. develop my palate and sort of kind of go from there. But I would say, you know, a lot of what I'm seeing on the internet now is basically what I did. I just so happened to do it a few years, I guess, maybe before this trend, and here I am, right?
Yeah. Well, you're essentially looking for production partners. And yeah. was there a checklist for you to kind of look for when you're looking for the right producer?
I mean, we've met like producers like all sorts of different ways. Like and then there's also distributors that we work with that work with producers that we like that we visited. I don't know that there's necessarily a checklist as much as there is like a Max, my business partner, and I, we joke all the time that we just kind of like go off intuition.
Yeah.
And like the name of our holding company as our inside joke is that it's Intuition Corporation, you know?
Oh, but, really?
It's an inside joke, but
yeah.
We've gone out there, I've gone out there, you know, probably 10 plus times now, specifically with the intent to either find matcha or meet with producers or just survey the landscape of what's available. But we've met producers all sorts of different ways. When I was first going out there with the intent to find matcha and specifically find producers, it was a lot of just like knocking on doors, getting connected to people. There is a gentleman who's a Forbes 30 under 30 member in Japan. He's a, you know, tea master, youngest tea master in Japan. We had gotten connected to him through somebody at Blue Bottle. And when I was in Japan, he was like, hey, if you're going to, you know, Uji, I can set you up with somebody. And he ended up setting us up with one of the most revered producers in all of Japan, who we kicked off our like sort of like matcha business with. And you know, to this day, like we still work with them. No set of like actual rigid checklist. It's more just trying to meet people, trying to, you know, get to know them better and get an understanding of what they're about, what their values are, if it kind of aligns with what we're doing. And then we let them know that, you know, we're here to obviously help grow their business, but at the same time we want to do it in a very respectful manner, and you know, we want to do it responsibly.
It feels like you really know how to make connections. Like even when you were working at Nike, you were connecting the brand beyond sports.
Yeah.
And also, you know, someone who's Forbes top 30, but then connecting you to Blue Bottle. So what's your secret to developing those connections and allow people to be excited to want to help you out, to make introductions?
I would say just being genuine, and, you know, it costs you nothing to be nice, right? And I feel like I have to now, because things have gotten busier, I have to constantly remind myself of that. But just being genuine, being nice, and sharing with people that, like, even though we might come from different parts of the world, that, you know, we share, at least for me right now in my sort of path on this matcha journey, like we share a love or an affinity for tea. And one of the cool things that I would say is, like, when I was recently in Japan, we did a pop-up and I had straight imposter syndrome. I was like, you know, here I am, Chinese American, selling Japanese green tea in Tokyo. Like, is anyone going to come? Is anyone, you know, like, and we were kind of like, we don't know what's going to happen. And I think what was really cool about that experience was, more than anything, was the fact that, like, so many people within the tea community in Japan actually came to that pop-up and, like, introduced themselves and were like, hey, we've been following what you're doing. We really like what you're doing. It's so cool that you can pop up here in the heart of Tokyo and, you know, share our product with the world. There's a Chasen, like a whisk maker that we've been working with for a number of years now. We went and visited with them. Like, they traveled all the way from Nara, which is
where the deers,
like,
are, and yeah, also where the, good
exactly,
matcha.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. They traveled all the way from Nara to, like, basically come and visit. And then they, like, were, it was so cute. They brought, like, whisk that they were like, we hope that you can use these for the pop-up. And so that to me was probably the most meaningful thing, was just knowing or learning that people that we respect so much and want to share what they're doing with the world could appreciate what we were trying to do in terms of just dimensionalizing what they do for a living. Because, you know, tea in Japan, like matcha is, it's one of those things where, like, the general population in Japan doesn't necessarily consume matcha because it's been used to kind of cater to foreigners. And there's more of it that's being exported than there is being consumed domestically. And so tea as a commodity in Japan is sort of, it's one of those things where, like, it's lowest common denominator. Like, people are just trying to figure out, like, what the cheapest version of it is, because it's something that you just get when you walk into a restaurant or when you go somewhere. So there's not this prestige that's necessarily put around it at a mass consumption level.
Yeah.
That's not to say that there aren't, you know, amazing tea schools and there's sort of artisans that want to preserve that craft. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying at a mass consumption level, tea is very much a commodity, you know?
Yeah. It's also so common, right? Also, like, for us, there is this novelty that we embrace with it right now. But I think what you are doing right, and that's why everyone was so excited at that pop-up, is that you truly pay respect to the tea culture in Japan. So I guess, like, what is your advice there when new founders are approaching an industry? Like, how do you make sure you pay respect to where products are coming from?
Shopify is one of the best platforms out there, right? And I'm not just saying this, but like anybody and everybody can basically start a business now because of Shopify. And I think, you know, with that comes a great deal of responsibility as an entrepreneur, because wherever you're getting your product from, capitalism is great. You know, we obviously thrive in this capitalistic society, but at the same time, I think it's just important to like have either, you know, transparency or line of sight into who you work with, how you treat your production partners, producers, supply chain, et cetera. I think it's one of those things that it's super important. And for us, when I visited with the Chasen maker in NAR, like, you know, one of the more profound visits that I've had, they make 7 or 8 chasens a day. That's it. They Wow. literally only make 7 or 8 a day. And so I feel honored to be able to tell their story and to give them a platform and to, you know, be able to showcase their product. And sometimes people don't understand why something costs what it does, but then it's our job to sort of tell that story and to go out to these producers and shoot content with them and sort of help storytell what they're doing, because it's not like, obviously everybody wants something right away. I mean, Amazon's made that really accessible, right? You can order today and it's here like within a few hours. But then there's still all these sort of like traditional crafts, whether it's yeah. in Japan or China or, you know, other parts of the world, that there still should be maybe some light shed on that. And what you're paying for is the craftsmanship and the attention to detail and the hours that that person spent making whatever that object is, as well as just time spent perfecting their craft.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, of course, like those moments where you have at the pop-up was like a great milestone, but we also have to highlight, you know, at the beginning, you also heard no's when you reach out to suppliers.
Yeah.
What do you say to people who are like going through that process, trying to look for partners, but they're also facing some rejections?
We had reached out to one of the more storied producers when we first started, just cold. And, you know, they have a website that's built on Shopify. Mm. And we just emailed them, cold emailed them, was like, hey, like, would love to work with you and get an understanding of like, you know, your product offering and this and that. And they like never replied. And then it wasn't until like 2 years later that they replied and they said, hey, we see what you're doing. And I literally could see, because his reply had my original email on it.
Wow.
And it said, like, you know, I wrote to him in 2020 or 2021 or whatever it was. And he replied in 2024, essentially.
Crazy.
And so I guess persistence and, you know, having conviction in what it is that you're doing, I think is super important. And if you believe in what you're doing, stay on that path, and, you know, like, I think good things will happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have that initial pop-up experience with your friend in the flea market.
Yep.
You do start a website,
yep.
but, you know, things don't just like, people don't just find you. So how do you kind of like build up momentum and get the word out?
Yeah. I mean, the most humbling thing I think about starting this business was me thinking that we would just turn the website on and sales would just start coming in. And that was not the case. Mm. I'm incredibly lucky to have some of the best friends in the world that have also started amazing businesses. One of my best friends, Pedro, started Community Goods. And so that's arguably the best cafe in Los Angeles. They have 2 locations right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not from LA, but I know that Justin Bieber and and Hailey Bieber are drinking your matchas. So I know it's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Pedro has built an incredible community, and I'm fortunate enough to call him one of my best friends. And so when he was getting ready to open Community Goods, it sort of aligned with when we were getting ready to start selling matcha. And so we had already done a lot of the legwork in terms of trying to figure out, you know, who had the best matcha, which producers, you know, who we would need to get it from in terms of like distributors, et cetera, et cetera. When they opened, we happened to be, you know, the curators of the matcha program for that cafe. And so I think with a lot of their success came our success, because I remember looking into like, where were we getting sort of our traffic from? And a lot of the searches were community goods matcha. And, you know, again, this is where, like, I think having a community definitely matters and supporting one another definitely matters. And I would say early on, community goods definitely played a huge role in our success. And then from there, I think we've also done a good job of trying to go above and beyond and, you know, educate our community as well as our customer as to, like, what we're trying to do, you know, shining a light on the producers that we work with. People are always asking, hey, like, what does this tin, like, what does this color mean? Or what does that mean? Or, and yeah. So we put something out that try to just educate, you know, why we have certain color tins for our matcha, what each color tin represents, et cetera. So yeah, it's probably twofold. And then I think there's amazing tools out there as a founder that I never really knew about, like working in a larger corporation, because there's so many different segmented departments that can do certain things. But when you're an entrepreneur and you're starting out and you're bootstrapping your company, or, you know, you're have a small team, like, you don't know that, hey, like, you have to think about email marketing, you have to think about SEO, you have to think about, you know, what's your social media strategy? Are you buying any ads on Google or Meta or, you know, so on and so forth? So yeah, it's a combination of all of that.
You touch on, like, you know, the different color tins. They're so eye-catching and they do stand out on socials and in real life. What was that thought process like to create the branding and the packaging?
So that credit has to go to my business partner, Max, who, you know, probably doesn't want me even talking about him right now, because he's very much just like wants to do the work, keep his head down and stay behind the scenes. But all the credit goes to him. He's an amazing creative. And between him and myself, like, we've been able to create something that stands out. Yeah. And, you know, he should get the majority of the credit for that, where we leaned into a color that isn't, you know, commonly associated with matcha, and that we picked blue, right? Like, and specifically like a darker blue. Mm-hmm. When I look at how we get tagged on Instagram or on TikTok, and there are all these like matcha review videos or photos, and, you know, like, you see this sort of like collection that somebody's put together, our tin stands out. And some of that was definitely by design and by choice. But I also think, you know, we took a lot of like what we learned from the industries that we sort of come from, and were able to be maybe a bit more disruptive in an industry that is a bit more traditional. And, you know, we still want to preserve the quality of everything that we're putting out into the world, but at the same time, we just want to kind of give our twist to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, the way that you're standing out as well is the fact that you truly highlight artists and you collaborate with them. Why has that been so integral to the brand as well?
Max and myself, we both have an affinity and love and appreciation for the arts. And, you know, we want to shine a light on artists, and we want to be able to work with them. And, you know, I think, like, there's always this idea, at least for me, that, you know, when you collaborate, it's 1 + 1 = 3. One of the things that I said to Max is that, like, I'd love for our business to be a platform for other artists. And I think that's kind of been the case with a lot of the ceramicists that we've highlighted, where they've been able to build a business because we started working with them, and then their business has grown because people kind of see what they're doing for us. And then, you know, they'll click into their website and buy something else that's not a matcha bowl. And I think that's just, like, again, like, the power of community, the power of working with one another and supporting like-minded, you know, folks. But yeah, I also just think it's another way that we've been able to maybe stand out a little bit. Like, we have such a tremendous respect for, again, like, artisans and traditional craft people in Japan. But, you know, we wanted to just kind of do something that would still be traditional, but also, you know, have a contemporary spin to it.
I love that you highlight that, because I feel like the way that you structured it is there is, you know, a way for customers to enter at a more, like, approachable price point. They can get a matcha bowl, but then you also highlight these, like, truly crafters and artisans, and you'll be able to, like, tell their story and justify why the price point is where it is. So
yeah.
You've developed partnerships with stores and cafes in Paris and London and beyond. So how do you go about developing those relationships internationally?
A lot of it is just inbound, to be honest. Paris is a relationship that we've had for a number of years now. And the founders of the cafe in Paris and I have become really good friends. We talk pretty regularly. That was a relationship that was born out of just me visiting Paris a lot and going to the cafe and being like, this is the best cafe, like such a good vibe and great energy. And from there, we did a pop-up there like probably 3 summers ago. And then from that, we've just kind of started to, you know, keep working together. And then more recently, I was just telling one of your producers, we offered catering services, specifically coffee and matcha and pastries in the Louis Vuitton office in Paris this men's fashion week. So that was pretty cool. And again, like we get to work with our friends, but a lot of it is organic and blessed to have relationships with amazing people that have amazing businesses that deserve all the credit.
So a part of the growth is also you collaborating with people outside of the food and beverage space. Yeah. So why is working with artists, musicians, festivals so important?
Yeah, I mean, again, like Max, my business partner, and I, we have a number of different things that we're into. He's like a creative by trade. I've always sort of worked with creatives, and we just want to tell great stories and, you know, work with like-minded folks. And through that and through a lot of the people that I've met over the years, we've been able to work with these brands that have kind of like outreached to us to be like, hey, like, you know, we're doing X, Y, and Z. Would you guys want to be a part of it? I mean, a lot of it is inbound and a lot of it is, again, like I feel like I keep saying this, but a lot of it is the community that, you know, we have that continuously want to support us, whether it's, you know, our friends at Ghetto Gastro and Courage Bagels wanting to do something together, or we have a matcha bar inside of the Awake store in New York. They're a streetwear brand founded by Angelo Bakke. We have a really, really, really good relationship with the Japanese brand Sakai. They are maybe some of our best partners. We've done things with them to help celebrate the launch of various capsule collections. They did something here in Los Angeles last year at Dover Street Market. So we essentially catered that event. But at the same time, when we did our pop-up in Tokyo that I was telling you about, they actually created, you know, a mini capsule collection for us. You know, they did a hoodie and a t-shirt, and I was blown away. Day one, there were people lining up, like wanting to buy it. And I think that's just the power of, you know, Sakai as a brand. Again, I just feel blessed that these amazing brands want to continue to, you know, work with us and shine a light on, you know, what it is that we're trying to do.
It's one thing to have those like reach outs, those relationships start, but what's your advice when you're like actually executing to make sure the partners enjoy what you do and they kind of come back for more as well?
I think like following through on whatever it is that you say that you're going to set out to do is obviously important. I think, you know, whenever we pop up, we always try and like blast it out to our email list or post it on our Instagram or, you know, what have you. And then in addition to that, if the event warrants it or if the pop-up warrants it, we'll also try and like capture content from it. And then we try and reshare that. And I think doing that showed a lot of the partners that we worked with that, I mean, obviously we want to make money, but at the same time, like it's not the only thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think going about it in a certain way, like in being, you know, more diligent, not taking any shortcuts and, you know, spending the money on having like really good content capture and storytelling like really does help push the business forward, because people will see it and people will share it and then they'll be like, okay, cool, like I'm gonna pay attention, like when's the next one that's happening. And also I think like just consistency. We just did our third Felix Art Fair, but Felix Art Fair is one of the art fairs that takes place in Los Angeles, and you know, we've been there 3 years in a row and we keep getting invited back because I think like now all of the attendees, all of the galleries that show there, like they know like where we are, and it's like, okay, cool, like I'm gonna go get an Uncle Polly sandwich and I'm gonna go get a Rockies matcha, and like they're right there in the courtyard by the pool.
Yeah, amazing. You have done so much, which I think would be surprising for our audience to know, is that this is still technically a side hustle. How do you like time manage to make sure you're able to run everything?
One, I think having an incredible team. We have, you know, the best, I think like the best team that have been willing to kind of just step in and do what it takes. Max, I mentioned, my business partner, he's the best. Like we talk every day, and I mean, it's never like, nothing's ever feels like we're pulling teeth. out of anything, right? Like, it's just very, like, even-keeled. And, you know, I think surrounding yourself with like-minded people that are all marching towards the same goal really helps. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to that, I think for me at least, just like putting everything in my calendar, having a to-do list on my phone, checking things off as, you know, as things get done. One of the more recent things that I started doing was like I block Instagram and Twitter. Like I actually have an app that doesn't let me go on it between the hours of 10 and 4, 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Yeah. And now I find myself like not doomsday scrolling, not like, but I'm probably more productive. And then the last thing I would say is just like trying to get more sleep. Like everybody says it, but like it really does make a difference. And so just making myself go to bed earlier and waking up earlier.
And I feel like there's also the other side of like running a side hustle is that, you know, I think a lot of entrepreneurship go through this where having something that's like secure, having something that is a safety net is important. How are you thinking about that philosophically right now?
Yeah. Listen, my parents immigrated to the U.S. when I was a baby, and I'm so appreciative of the fact that, like, you know, they basically helped me get where I'm at right now. Yeah. Oftentimes, like, when I go back and visit them in China, I reflect on the fact that, like, life could have been a lot different had I not had the chance or had my dad not immigrated, you know, first and then brought my mom and then brought me. I say that because I think, like, the immigrant mentality is, like, you know, you go, or at least my parents' version of it was, like, you go, you get really good grades in school, you study hard, you graduate college, maybe you go and get a master's or, mm-hmm. you know, you go to med school or law school or dental school or whatever it is, and you get a secure job and, you know, you kind of like climb the corporate ladder or you do whatever it is that you need to do. And, you know, then you start your family, right? And mm-hmm. so that isn't lost on me. And I think that's like one of the things, maybe it's this mental hurdle that I would need to get over at some point mm-hmm. in order to kind of like take that leap of faith to go full time. But everybody's on a different path. Yeah. And I think everybody can do things a different way. I talk about this with a lot of my founder friends. Some people have gone all the way in, and in doing so, they've needed to go out and raise money. So that's one way of doing things, right? And then the other is, I guess, the way that we've done it, which is not paying ourselves, but, you know, maintaining this as somewhat of a side hustle that then becomes, you know, your full-time thing because you've been able to kind of like build it. If you're going to work 9 to 5, then, you know, this becomes a 5 to 9 or 9 to 5 the other hours a day or, you know, whatever mm-hmm. it is. So, yeah, I don't think there's any like right or wrong answer. Yeah. I think it's just like staying committed to whatever it is that you want to be building.
Yeah. And I feel like your story, especially right now, is like so valuable to highlight because I feel like we need to highlight more realistic entrepreneurial journeys. And I think doing what's comfortable for you, doing what's sustainable for you, it's so important.
Yeah. I think, you know, how I got to where I am today is probably going to be very different than, you know, some of the other founders that have probably sat here in this chair. And there's no right or wrong answer. Mm-hmm. I think like everybody's journey is going to be different. I have to constantly remind myself that it's not a competition. Like you're not competing with anybody. You might think that you are, but like in reality, like we're on our own journey and we're all trying to like just figure out what it is that we want. Like some people want to make a ton of money. Like other people just want to be able to tell amazing stories. Other people just want to sell whatever it is that they're, you know, selling because they're making it and they have a deep passion for it, you know, or it could be a mix of all those things. And so again, there's so many different ways to get to the end goal.
What's next for Rockies? Any exciting projects or things that you can tell us about?
We have a few things. We just moved into an office, so that, you know, is exciting. I still can't believe that we're doing, you know, a lot of this business out of like storage units, like essentially where I would store pop-up equipment and this and that, and out of my apartment for a long time. So we got an office. We're in the process of furnishing it and making it look really nice and being able to eventually host you or whoever else from Shopify wants to come.
Amazing.
We're going to continue to do more food festivals and just trying to get out there and like spread the gospel around matcha and tea and, you know, our product. So there are probably a few more like bigger ones that I'd rather just keep under wraps until like, you know, we actually have term sheets signed and all that. But yeah.
Yeah, we got to keep our eyes peeled on socials for Rocky's matcha. So thank you so much for being here, Rocky.
Thanks for having me.
That's Rocky Xu of Rocky's Matcha. Thanks for tuning in to Shopify Masters. Join us Tuesdays and Thursdays for brand new episodes. We'll see you next time.